very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
turn.
Your fingers or your
king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
I am
super girl.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am
the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffrey Podcast. My name's Bubba. You can reach me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And with me, as always, is
Catnip. Oh, no, wait. I'm sorry. I'm Catfish.
Yeah, somebody on our Facebook page, that's facebook.com/doublepodcasts. Somebody on facebook.com wrote this nice, wonderful feedback. They referred to you as Catnip instead of Catfish. It's Catfish. Catfish, tell everybody how they can reach you on Twitter and how you're doing.
I'm doing great because,
great.
I mean, because cats love me. just like our Lord and Master Joffrey, cats love me.
Heck.
I'm Catnip for the ladies and the cats. My name is actually Catfish, and you can hit me up at CJGman67 on Twitter. And that's it. I'm on Twitter.
Okay, so let's get to it. Today we're going to be reviewing Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 7, The Broken Man. Are you, Catfish, excited? Give us your rating for this episode out of 10.
All right. I am going to give this 8.5, what I like to call double S's.
Double S's?
Yeah, supplicating Starks.
Ooh. So,
please arm us. So, please join our army.
8.5, that's really high. That seems like you really liked us. Why did you go so high, Catfish?
Well, what's crazy is I've been complaining about some things, and I think part of the problem I identified earlier was not enough characters that we know clashing with each other. And when that happens, we don't have as crackling dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So my rating, I think I would have given it a 7. I bump it up an entire 1.5 because there were like 7 or 8 lines that made me laugh, that I wanted to cheer about. The dialogue was crackling again, and that's because why? We have Cersei clashing with Olenna. Why? We have Bronn back again with his foul mouth. Why? We got the motherfucking cocksucker, Ian McShane, as a priest. And so this is what I was missing out on. Give me some delicious dialogue that I can salivate over. And I thought they did that. It didn't, you know, the plot wasn't, I thought the overwhelming plot wasn't like, wow, amazing. I mean, it was great to see the Hound back again. I'm excited to see him after he got killed with a sword. Wait, edit. Sorry, I blew that last week. So that's my excitement because it was like crackling dialogue and like watching a good Aaron Sorkin piece. When the dialogue crackles, it's like a frisson of energy I feel. So I think I overrated the episode itself because of that. So I want to know, Bubba, how did you rate this episode out of 10?
Well, Catfish, I'm going to give this 8. What I like to call triple H's out of 10.
No, triple H's?
Yes, that's what I like to call holy healthy hounds.
Holy healthy hounds.
We left him for dead or left him to get better. Hello, I want his health plan. I really like the episode. I am going to subtract 2 points for what I like to call double M's.
Double M's?
Missing Melisandre's. She rode out with everybody from Castle Black, and they're like, Melisandre, you could kind of creep everybody out. We're just going to leave you. Don't talk to the wildlings. Don't talk to the Glovers. Don't talk to the Mormonts. You kind of hang out over here.
Well, you know, for sexist Catfish got his fill, too, because they went to a whorehouse. Congratulations.
Hey, win in Volantis. Be sure to visit.
You know what? They don't build asses like that on the Iron Islands. And that's some other good dialogue that I didn't even mention.
All right. We just want to remind any new listeners to the podcast, any new viewers of our live Periscope stream right here after the episode, that once again, you can enter a contest to win some wonderful prizes we're going to be giving away in...
Oh man, we got some good prizes.
After the 10th episode of Game of Thrones this year. And the way you enter is there are so many different ways. You can tweet out hashtag Joffrey Podcast. You can go to iTunes or Stitcher and leave a written review. You can't just leave stars. You have to leave a written review. You're entered into the contest.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. Maybe a simpler way is just go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/doublepodcast, plural, facebook.com/doublepodcast. Like that page, you're entered. And let's get to this episode. In Catfish, I can't have my weekly commenting on the opening credits.
I was so excited. They're like, damn it. Bubba keeps going on and on about the damn opening credits. So let's just start with a cold opening. Amazing.
And he's back.
You know, but before that, what was crazy was, even though we had the previously on,
yeah,
I was a little concerned.
I thought
they might have mistakenly been showing another show, like Outlander or something. There was hopeful music. It was idyllic. I thought, are we watching Game of Thrones or are we watching something? And because the other thing was,
yeah,
these people are small folk.
Yeah, they are.
This show doesn't give a damn about small folk unless they're about to get killed. Whoops! Spoiler alert.
Hey, now. Sure enough, we begin at the Quaker village here in Westeros. Let's raise not a barn, but a sept. They are building the seven-sided sept here out in this countryside.
Love it, love it.
And who
it's
is
a
there?
Motherfucking sept, y'all.
You keep saying that because Ian McShane from the great HBO show Deadwood and so many others.
Ended before its time, but it was the Shakespearean foulness on that show was great.
Yeah, it definitely was. And did you know, as soon as you saw this, did you know we were going to see the Hound? Because I think many book readers or people who paid attention to the title of this episode, if you read the fourth book, A Feast for Crows, and you saw an episode titled The Broken Man, it was a big doo-doo-doo-doo red flashing light that was going to say, he is back. And they do some slight editing tricks where they don't show you his face right at first. You know, they see this, many people carrying a log,
yeah,
and then one big-ass dude carrying a log. Then the next thing you know, it is
I called it. I better called it for sure. Because as you know, I did not finish reading the fourth book, and yet
I thought he was coming back last week.
Well, as you know now, right. Should I say again, I did not finish reading the fourth book.
He's back. This seems incredible. Does it stretch believability? You know, this is a show with dragons. This is a show with wildfire. This is a show with, you know, White Walkers. Does it stretch, quote unquote, the believability? Because when we last saw you know who, when we last saw the Hound, if he wasn't dead, he was as close to dead as you could be. He looked terrible.
Apparently, he had a compound fracture, which is what happens when you get a bone sticking out of your skin.
Yikes!
Not pleasant.
No, not good at all. But he's back.
He's still one of the hardest workers and strongest dudes.
Apparently, he was saved by this Septon. And this not-so-sweet Septon, because this guy did a lot of terrible things apparently in the past when I believe he was a soldier. He was talking about doing things.
And oh, so he did horrible things.
And so the Hound is back, and he has found kind of a happy place, a happy little Quaker village.
Well, not only that, and we're going to get into it in the next scene, but pretty much Ian McShane thing says to him, you think you're bad, I'm just as bad as you were. And, of course, we're never going to get rid of that. That's we're going to carry that with us. But that doesn't mean that you can't try to live a good life.
You know, I keep joking about this being the Quakers.
Sorry, no jokes. Can you just stick to the storyline, please?
That's what many of our fans want us to do.
They're not the right fans for this show.
But what do we know about the Quakers here in the United States? Is that, you know, they preach nonviolence. If everybody's seen that great film Witness, somebody comes up and, you know, sticks an ice cream in the guy's face, and rather than pushing or using violence, the guy chooses nonviolence. And that seems to be what this village of people are pushing on the Hound.
And Ian McShane says near the end, which is smart, is violence is like a kind of like a plague or a disease.
Right.
You only spread it when you commit it. You can't stop it by committing more. I thought it was cool.
But is the show / the universe that this is in trying to argue the opposite point? Because, well, spoiler alert for how the episode ended, it didn't end too well for these peaceful people.
No, it doesn't end well for pretty much anybody on this show, and especially anybody who is, as we again would call, the small folk. They're pretty much screwed no matter who's rising on the wheel.
So these three thugs come up. Now, what's interesting about these three thugs is the only thing that kind of gives them away as being, well, they're not, you know, soldiers run amok, is they tell Ian McShane and they tell the Hound, they tell him, be careful because the night is dark and full of terrors.
Ooh.
Those are the words, or some of the you know, kind of chanting that the people who follow the Lord of Light do.
Yeah.
And that makes the Hound assume they're the Brotherhood. Now, if you can remember back to season three, the Brotherhood, they kidnapped Arya, or they captured Arya, but quote unquote, they seem like the good guys back then. These guys today, they weren't good guys at all. They slaughtered everybody. So has the Brotherhood turned bad? What are we supposed to take from these bastards?
That's interesting. I mean, the idea that it feels to me on this show is, you know, people are only good while they're on the bottom and oppressed. And then when they get on top, they become just as much bastards as the guys who was in charge before. So, you know, another interesting thing that Ian McShane says in this is that he talks to him about God. Doesn't matter who you call him.
Right.
Somebody's out there. And basically the Hound says, well, look, if there's a God, I should have been punished. And Ian McShane makes a good point.
Yeah.
For a guy who's been left for dead and had half his face burned off. If you haven't gone through punishment, I don't know who we can quite say has. You for sure have gotten some punishment. Would you consider yourself having gotten off scot-free, Mr. Hound?
No, he cannot feel this. But let's get to the end of the episode.
Okay.
All these sweet, innocent people, including, as you pointed out, the women and children, have been slaughtered. The Hound, living peaceful, but he picks up his big axe. What does this say going forward?
Well, I was concerned. I thought they were going to take away some of the women. Was it something supposed to be cut off? Did the Hound only hear – did only a couple people actually scream? Or did he hear the beginnings of screaming and then it took him 10 minutes to walk over there with his
– Hurt leg.
Hurt leg. Yeah. And then he sees Ian McShane hung up on a cocksucking rope.
For anybody who didn't watch the show Deadwood, we want to point out real quickly that his character said cocksucker an awful lot. So if you're wondering – why in the world is the Joffrey podcast mentioning cocksucker like every other word? It's just, once again, tying back to his great role on HBO's Deadwood series.
Yeah, and one of our old friends, Extraordinary, who sometimes does this podcast, he was a little upset. He thought that was a waste of Ian McShane. All I'm going to say is this.
Do you agree? Do you agree that was a waste of Ian McShane?
I don't think it was a waste of him. It would have been nice to seen him in a bigger part, but what is left for him? I mean, maybe, again, he just wanted to get on to Game of Thrones. It's a good role for him. I would have liked to have seen him in something bigger.
There's always a chance that if the Night King gets south of the wall, he could come back.
Oh, Ian McShane, I love it.
Or
he'd be a motherfucking White Walker.
Or if Melisandre could get there somehow, she'd be like, all right, time to breathe some life back into all these poor people.
Yeah, well, he's open to everything.
Well, some people do accuse the show
of,
and even the books, they say, is this too just nihilistic? Is it too much evilness in people being destroyed? In this show, even though we both really like this episode a lot, you know, if you look at the big picture, let's talk about it. The Blackfish turns down a chance for peace. The Hound, the sweet people in the village end up dead. Arya ends up stabbed multiple times in the guts. What positive things happened? Theoretically, the positive things are Sansa, Jon, and the Starks got some people onto their side so they can go fight a war. That's our positiveness.
Right. No, this is not... I want to disabuse anybody of this notion who is on their 57th episode of Game of Thrones and finally thinking to themselves, gee, isn't anything good ever going to happen? No, not really. Just not at all.
You're repeating Ramsay's line of, if you think this has a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention.
Well, you know, Ramsay and I have a lot in common.
Yes, I sure do. I really, really do.
All right. Well, so that's the Hound. We're going to see some more of the Hound. I assume the first thing that'll do is cut down that cocksucker, Ian McShane, and then go along in his merry way. So let me ask you a question. The next thing we do is we get to Marjorie, and she, we know she's very smart, so we can't believe that she believes this. And yet, to me, she's doing a great job of making me think, even though against all odds, against I know how much she cares about her brother, she's still selling this pretty good. I'm still, even though I know everything about her, I think there's a 10% chance she might actually believe it. What percentage do you have?
Or that's what you still think?
No, I'm completely convinced now that she's just selling this in the smartest way, as she is a smart person, that she had to do. How do I get out of this? I got to go full bore.
Well, that's what we talked about last week, is would anybody buy this conversion? And I didn't. And through it all, I knew that this was all just an act. And I thought it was very powerful, and you're right.
But she sold it really
She's selling it great. And when she and the High Sparrow sat down, I thought, oh, dear Lord, not another High Sparrow speech. I am so sick of them. I thought, okay,
but it was so funny because she says,
let's learn when I used to be a cobbler. Oh, my Lord.
No, because she says, I didn't really like the porn. He's like, well, nobody should. You know, they show us what we could be if we didn't wash and we were dirty and we were grungy and we smelled, you know, kind of like the way I do right now.
So she's saying, I used to hate those people and now I love them. Well, did you think when the High Sparrow sat down next to her and he puts his hand on her lap, I thought the Boston Globe is going to have to investigate this.
Because she's of age.
And then we had a lot of listeners tweeted us. A lot of them, they were happy for Marjorie. They talked about growing strong, the house words of House Tyrell.
Right.
And about flower power. But we also had a bunch who were really creeped out by the High Sparrow saying, you know, you need to produce an heir. And how does the High Sparrow know that she and Tommen haven't had marital relations?
You know, he's counseling Tommen. He's got Tommen in his pocket.
Right.
If the Boston Globe needs to investigate any relationship, it's the High Sparrow and Tommen's relationship. At least until Tommen's voice breaks.
Right. Marjorie later is in the Red Keep in the castle there in King's Landing.
Uh-huh.
And the Shame Septa, Eunella, is with her the whole time. Do you think, for whatever reason, if Marjorie and Tommen were going to start getting busy, the Shame Septa would have to be in there like...
She certainly would do it if they got involved in any physical activity that wasn't strictly leading to producing an heir. I was going to say heir, but basically oral sex, no, that doesn't do it. No rubbing, no stroking, just boom, get right to it.
And then let's get to it. The High Sparrow, in his discussion with Marjorie,
right?
He's like, you know, you've helped bring Tommen, King Tommen, into the faith.
Okay.
You know what? But there are other sinners out there, like your grandmother. Your grandmother is a huge sinner. And let me tell you this.
Uh-huh.
It is one thing to do a your mama joke, but when you start insulting people's grandmas, holy smokes. Is that when Marjorie's eyes really open up like we could all be in double D?
Double D?
Deadly danger.
I think she already knows what's going on. I mean, she clearly knows how dangerous he is. She's playing a very dangerous game that she has to play very carefully. Mm-hmm. And it's tough, I think, to fool somebody like the Sparrow, because all he does is sit around and think about what people are doing. He doesn't waste any time washing. He doesn't waste any time brushing. He doesn't waste any time dressing. Okay, so he's got extra time to track down heathens.
Right, but I want to use the High Sparrow's words here. He says the Queen of Thorns is a remarkable woman, a strong woman, and an unrepentant sinner.
God bless her.
Ooh, you tell your grandma's an unrepentant sinner? He's like, you have to teach her the new way, just as she taught you, or else I feel for her safety, body and soul. What an SOB.
I'd be more concerned about her body. Her soul is already just messed up. Clearly, Marjorie knows what's going on. And again, she's very smart here. She's totally selling it to her grandmother in front of the Septa. She's saying all the right words. The only thing that she does is she hands Olenna a piece of paper. And what's on that piece of paper, Bubba?
The sigil, the symbol of House Tyrell, the rose, meaning she's still a Tyrell deep down. But I wondered a bit if Lady Olenna doesn't really know how to play as well as she should, because with Septa Eunella, the Shame Septa, hovering over Marjorie's shoulder, she was still her sassy self. She was still her quip self. But they have your grandson, Loras, in a frigging cell. Then they have this woman who can report on what you're saying back to the High Sparrow. I love Lady Olenna Tyrell. Diana Rigg, the actress who plays her, does a great job. But once again, I'm thinking to myself, get with the program, get on the act, lady.
My only counter to that would be,
yeah,
even though Olenna kind of knows what's going on with the Sparrow, I think she still holds her prejudices about who's important. In other words, I don't think she talked this way to the Sparrow, but she thinks of the Septa as an underling. So she's still thinking of them as, okay, this isn't like the Sparrow being the king and then Septa Unella being like one of his knights that she could speak to. You know what I mean? She's not, she's looking at things the old way in that this is an underling I can speak in front of because she's not on par with me.
I hope so. I really hope so. So,
well, either way, she's getting the F.O.
And Marjorie was very strong about it. She is like, you've got to go. You've got to go. You've got to go. Because Marjorie got that message loud and clear.
Loud and clear.
When the High Sparrow said, I'm worried about her body and soul.
Well, how – and I love Olenna. Again, her interactions, not just with Marjorie, right, but particularly with Cersei, were part of the reason why I gave this episode such high marks. Mm-hmm. So she's a smart cookie, and she's got to know she's in danger. So the only reason she's leaving is because Marjorie has convinced her, look, you haven't lost me. I'm playing my own game. Get out for the safety. So she's trusting in Marjorie. She knows she's in danger. By staying, the only reason she would stay is if she thought, oh my God, Marjorie's lost and I have to save her. Now that she knows that Marjorie is playing a game, she's going to trust Marjorie and get out of town.
And Marjorie drops a bit of her act when she hugs her grandmother goodbye. Youch. Somebody in our Periscope chat, which we do, mm-hmm, which we do live after every Game of Thrones episode.
Wow,
somebody
live
in the Periscope chat was like, they wanted to see a new fight. They want to see Olenna versus Unella.
Oh, man.
The Queen of Thorns versus the Shame Septa.
And then someone else wants to see, they want to ship Unella and Tormund.
You think Tormund would be able to get her to stop ringing shame, shame, shame?
She'd be ringing that bell for another reason, let me tell you.
And Lady Olenna, she has a nice smile.
They don't call him the WW for nothing.
Double W.
Yeah, the Wyndham Wizard.
Heck yeah.
You thought I was going to come up with something smart, but I didn't.
Okay. Lady Olenna, she has a really nice smile when she unfolds that secret message that Marjorie passed to her and sees the rose. It's like, oh, thank goodness. But she knows that her daughter's in trouble. Her daughter, she's trying to convince her daughter to get out of town. But her daughter's like, my place is with the king, because that's the other part of the High Sparrow threat. We've got your brother. I fear you're for your grandmother's body and soul, but guess what else? You've got to produce an heir. So this was torture in some ways. This is pressure. This is blackmail. We mm-hmm. have your brother. You know what we can do. Mm-hmm. Get in line or else. And so that leads to a scene, a really great scene, I thought.
Again, this is, I said it earlier, we want to see more of these people clashing. And Cersei and Olenna is like, make an allusion that's important on this weekend. It's like Ali Frazier.
Well, which one's which then?
Well,
because some of Cersei,
both Ali.
I was going to say, some of Cersei's decisions seem like she's taken a lot of punches to the head.
I'll say this. Yeah. In this particular fight, I think they've gone back and forth. In this one, Olenna stings like a bee about four different times. Let me quote some of her lines. The first thing she says is, I wonder if you're the worst person I've ever met. And she talks about how she's seen lots of horrible people, but I think you're the worst person. And then she says, at the end, she says, you've lost, Cersei. It's the only joy I can find in all this mess.
Oh,
she does. She does save one of her zingers for someone who's not even there.
Who?
Referring to the High Sparrow as a shoeless zealot.
Oh, man. This is showtime at the Red Keep. She's just...
It is just burn, burn,
burn. She's
an burn.
Insult comic, and she's ready to go.
It's surprising that the Frankenhound didn't pick up Olenna and smash her against a wall.
Right. She better not... She better watch out when she uses the restroom like that one guy.
Exactly.
He really got it. And some people in our Periscope are like, yeah, how come Sir Frankengregor just doesn't twist that? you know, pluck that rose and just totally smash her.
You know, Dooley's left legs makes a good point. If the High Sparrow's dad was a cobbler, why doesn't he have any shoes? He should at least have some shoes. Maybe he didn't have a good relationship with his dad.
Nobody in this show outside the Starks has a good relationship with... Well, Ollie had a great relationship with his father, and look at how that turned out. So.
Not good.
Okay, so I have to do it. Get ready, folks, for yes. Better Call Call.
Oh,
okay.
Lena is the best.
And I am really worried about this Better Call Call being correct.
Uh-oh, you're worried?
Because Lady Olenna Tyrell, she just totally throws Cersei the truth. And what she's saying is, hey, you've got no friends. You've got no allies. The masses hate you. The Sparrow and his Faith Militant and his Sparrows, they hate you.
They cut you off.
Everybody hates you. Yeah. The only person who liked you, you just sent out of town. You know, you got sent out of town. And she's like, you just stink. You've lost. And so this gets me thinking. Cersei is really upset. She doesn't have anybody, but she wants revenge. And so what do we remember from last week's episode? I remember a certain explosion of wildfire. I don't think you want Cersei, who knows that everybody in this friggin' city hates her. I just am worried about putting two and two together and it ending up being a
Oh, so you think it's Cersei now with the wildfire?
Well, that's who I've always thought it was, to be honest. I didn't say it last week, but now that that Lady Olenna is kind of explaining to Cersei why. Because Lady Olenna's right in some ways, too. She's like, Cersei,
ways?
No, sorry. She's right in every way. But one of the ways she's right in is she's like, Cersei, why are you still here? Get the F out of KL, man. This is crazy.
You know what? And that is a great point. I mean, Olenna is sticking around because her children are still held captive. What has Cersei got? I mean, Cersei's got presumably Tommen, but...
Would you stay around for Tommen? I wouldn't. Later.
Who cares about Tommen? Tommen is lost.
Right.
However.
Tommen is lost. Tommen just sent her lover away. Good work. Oy boy.
Yeah. Although, again, before that all happens, it looks like, and spoiler alert for people who don't watch the next week on, because they don't want to be spoiled, it looks like that this finally, Sir Franken Gregor is finally going to be put into action. Chekhov's monster is finally going to go off.
Right. It seems like next week she's finally going to choose violence. So, spoiler alert.
Thank God.
It is going to blow up. So,
I realized this is what I was missing. I was almost levitating during the scene. It gave me a thrill.
Catfish, we've gone through two of the scenes we're going to cover. We've gone through the Hound in the Sept there that got destroyed by those evil bandits. We've gone through King's Landing. Which of the two, you gave this an 8.5. Are they both 8.5 location/storylines this week?
No. The King's Landing storyline is the most exciting because it involves more than one of the people that we are involved in.
Right.
I mean, we don't know where the Hound is going to end up. So right now it's just his journey. If we knew he was joining somebody, if we knew where the Hound was going, that would be more exciting. I have no idea where he's going. For all I know, he could end up with Samwell, and that'd be super boring.
Has axe, will slaughter. All right, so let's go to one of the places that many book readers may have been waiting for.
Okay.
And that is a little place on the river. Great place to fish, vacation spot.
You don't want
to
walk.
It's River Run.
You want a River Run.
Heck yeah.
And what's the first thing that's exciting about River Run?
Well, for a lot of people, I think it's going to be the return of
Bronn, baby. Double B, Bronn, baby. Love Bronn.
And I am always talking about the great work. We talk about the great acting on this show, sometimes the great writing, and I always bring up the great effects. I had seen this shot of River Run in an early released photo that HBO had done, and it didn't look too great in a photo. There's still times where it's not perfect, but because they built so much of the drawbridge practically, that does look really good.
Well, I'm glad that you were pleased by that. Now,
oh my God,
we are about to see, and this is, I wanted to see Jaime stay on at King's Landing. I felt like there was a lot of action there for him.
Right.
I'm not particularly attached to this storyline yet.
Okay.
The River Run, again, it seems kind of a side trip until we spend a lot of time there and then it becomes more important. Again, I don't care too much for it right now. However, to have Jamie back, to have Braun back, and again, we had a super fun line here, which we'll get to in a second, but your boy Braun's back. He's always bitter. Braun's a little bitter because he doesn't have all his, he doesn't have his hot babe. Now, I thought he was, you know, Jamie says, I'm going to hook you up with a good title. I'm going to hook you up with a hot woman. Didn't he hook him up with a middling title and a middling woman already?
Okay, Catfish. So for people who can't remember that storyline,
yeah,
and are not hosting a Game of Thrones podcast.
Good.
What that was mm-hmm. back
break it down
in season four.
Great. Ooh, that's 2 years ago.
It was Tyrion's trial, and Cersei didn't want anybody assisting Tyrion. So Cersei hooked up Bronn with Fallis Stokeworth and got him a wedding. And that's why he couldn't testify for Tyrion in the trial. That's why he didn't want to be a champion, besides the fact because he didn't think he could fight them out. Then, if you watched the show and saw season five,
okay,
then he was with Lawless Stokeworth, and Jaime came up and said, hey, I've canceled your engagement to her. You've got to come with me and help me rescue my daughter in Dorne. So that's the way it was.
Oh,
but he
right.
said, if you come to Dorne, I'll get you riches. So, now that, is there anything else we need to recap?
No, you can edit all that out.
So Jamie comes up and they brings a huge army with him. And the phrase, I don't even want to say it looks like an army. It really looks like a hovel. It looks like a pigsty in many ways because they're walking through actual pigs. And who is there? The evil phrase. They've got Edmure hung up and they are calling out to the Blackfish Tully. Blackfish, who we hadn't seen. We've heard of him a lot in these last couple of weeks, but we haven't seen the Blackfish since the Red Wedding episode
when right.
he went out to relieve himself and disappeared and got free. This tactic, what do you think about it? They're like, hey, we have your nephew, Blackfish. Surrender the castle or we're going to kill him. Is this the right move, wrong move? What do you think, Catfish?
It might be the right move, say, for Cersei.
Right.
If they had Joffrey. But as I do recall,
right.
Edmure was a little bit of a weakling. He couldn't light the pyre. So it's not like he's the shining star of this family.
Well, you could say that. The flip side of that is that technically Edmure is the one who really owns River Run. It was his father who died, who was in the boat, and so it should be his castle.
So if the Blackfish lets them kill Edmure, then
he gets a castle, right.
But so it's win-win, basically.
He later implies that the reason why he doesn't take this threat is they're going to kill him anyway. So either...
It makes sense.
Either they take the castle and they kill him, or he gives them the castle. They get the castle. They still kill it.
Now,
they don't want the rightful owner of the castle thing.
Now, what people would do if they weren't these two beheaded morons,
yeah.
if it was another group, if it was, say, Jamie, if it was somebody else,
right.
you, when you make that kind of vow and they say no, you do it.
Correct.
He's not worth anything if they're not afraid of him getting killed. So you just go, okay, boom, done, one less mouth to feed. But they're too wimpy for that.
Well, you say that. Why do you think Jamie says, hey, clean him up, get him looking good?
Yes. I mean, if they're going to hold him captive, they might as well treat him right. I mean, Jamie sort of – it feels like he kind of hews to that code where when you have a prisoner, you treat him right. You don't cut his arm off. You treat him – cut his hand off. Sorry. Right. You treat him as a royal hostage
yeah,
does.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And Jamie – him backslapping this fray with his golden hand. Really
oh my
fun.
God. He
really
is kicking
good.
Ass.
That's going to leave and does leave a mark.
And then he has another one of my favorite lines when he's referring to when he's going to bring his people. He says, the next time the Blackfish looks out here, he'll see an army, not whatever this is.
Hey. This is a lot of people talking trash in this episode. Is that why you like it so much?
Yes, Catfish? Exactly.
Trash talking.
It's motherfucking smack talk is what it is, and I like it.
And you know, we're about to, as we stay in River Run, we're about to get to even more smack talk because
Blackfish is going to talk some smack.
Yeah, he's the Blackfish. It's a double B. Blackfish back talk, and he Jamie can dish it out. Jamie can also apparently take it because the Blackfish just totally, he's unimpressed. Oh,
well, that's what he says. Jamie essentially says, well, wait a second. You came out to talk to me. You came out to parlay. And it's clear you weren't going to do anything.
Right.
Why did you come out and parlay? And he says, well, I wanted to see you. And Jamie's like, oh, well, all right, great. You saw me. And he says, yeah, now I have seen you and I'm disappointed.
Right. Jamie wouldn't do good as a door-to-door salesman. His pitch.
He would not do good. Well, then the question really is, who's the worst door-to-door salesman in this episode between Jamie and John?
Right. They both seem to fail. Well, John does well with wildlings. He's better with, you know, he's better with a group than one-on-one salesmanship.
Oh, man. Now I'm just thinking there's more zings coming up.
Oh, this episode
is John and Sansa. It's so good.
This episode is nothing but zingers. It is great. The Blackfish reminds viewers of Jamie being released by his niece, a.k.a.
Good. Sometimes
Catelyn Stark.
I need reminding. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
No, come on. I doubt it. I assume you showed up to return my niece's daughters to me, a.k.a. Sansa and Arya. And he's like, don't have them. That's probably the worst way to start. You could probably have said, Jamie, I'm sorry I did not bring those with me. You know, there's kind of... But Jamie is doing a bit. Is this a parallel to the Ian McShane Septon who was telling the Hound, look, go for peace, go for peace? Jamie, his first pitch is really, hundreds are going to die if you don't do this.
And the Blackfish reminds him, yes, hundreds of us will die and thousands of you will die. Again... Zing.
Youch. And he keeps calling Jamie an oathbreaker. He calls him Kingslayer. First thing he's going to say. I really liked the Blackfish. We haven't seen him much. He was in a handful of episodes in season 3. We haven't seen him since. But he really jumps back in, guns a-blazing.
He really does. I mean, again, when you open with Kingslayer and you lather on oathbreaker, you kind of have to think from the other side, I'm not sure that he trusts me. He might think I'm not trustworthy. And he does indicate some important things. Number one, no, the war's not over because I hold grudges.
Right.
Number two, we can stay in this castle a long, long time. They have 2 years worth of food. How do you get 2 years worth of food?
Well, you start storing up for winter. You could see a lot of the breaths in the scene. So maybe it's getting colder there in the...
Well, the other thing, and again, this is always happening, you know, they say, you know, when winter is coming, trying to storm a castle in winter as opposed to being inside of a castle in winter is bad. Not that they've, in the olden times when this is set, that, you know, they had a lot of warmth in castles.
Right.
But still better than being in a tent.
I also wonder if your castle is on a river, can't you just get fish? Can't you just catch stuff?
Oh, good point. But you know what I would do?
What?
Is, you know, you poison the river.
Oh.
You kill some people, you throw them in the water, so it poisons the river.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man, catfish, Tywin Lannister would love your battle plans. That's pretty hardcore. I like it a lot.
That's what I like to call Jeffreyan.
Because you did not finish the fourth book, Catfish, do you want to have a guess to where this is going? People who have read the fourth book have an idea of where this could possibly go because the showrunners could change it. So any guesses as to where it's going?
Well, I feel like it's kind of been spoiled by the on next week. I would not have guessed that that was what was coming.
Okay. All right, so we're going to leave, and we're going to go across the narrow sea to Volantis. Tyrion visited there last year, and now it is Theon's chance to visit a brothel. And Theon, he feels a little out of place at the brothel. Is that what you would say? What would you say?
I would say that probably doesn't represent kind of joy that it used to for him.
No, he used to really love visiting Roz the Whore in Winterfell. Remember back to season 1? He really liked her.
He sure did.
And the Greyjoy and their fellow pirates from the Iron Islands, they are having a great old time. Volantis looks like Vegas.
I do remember a time when Theon tried to molest his sister, even though he didn't know that she was a sister. So this is a different Theon.
He's Reek still,
although,
possibly.
We could, in this scene, we do find out maybe a reason why he did not succeed with his sister.
You're saying she played for a different team?
She did indeed play for a different team. She has her own opinions about asses and breasts and also about cocksucking. She's not into it.
Well, Theon is really not himself. And Yara's...
He's about 95% himself. Ouch. But that 5% is a doozy.
Yara's plan to get the old Theon back is what I like to call double P.
Double P?
Peer pressure. Drink, pledge, drink. Do you agree with her thought process of let's make him drink himself back to normal?
Well, it's amazing the way the scene was directed. I mean, when he's drinking that, it's almost as if it's someone else forcing drink down his mouth. His reaction to it is so... It's as if someone else is forcing drink down his mouth. I mean, he's really... He just doesn't like it. And you have to assume, you know, with his double P...
Double P?
Phantom penis.
Ouch.
Thank you, Periscope. That a lot of this has been stripped or flayed from him by the Boltons. He's been beat down, and she's right. He's got to come back if he's going to help her. Now, she doesn't want him to come back too much, because if he comes back too much, he'll take over and he'll treat her like dirt again.
Well, did you buy this final goodbye to Reek? Is this the final goodbye to Reek where Theon's going to be strong, going to help her with her plan to go to the Dragon Queen and take back the Iron Islands from their evil Uncle Euron?
I'm not sure we're ever going to see the Theon we saw before, which might be a good thing. I mean, basically, he was sort of a douchebag braggadocio.
Right.
He was, as Ian McShane might say, a badass motherfucker. And he might become a character we sort of like. I mean, I didn't feel pity for him as Reek because of all the things he'd done as Theon.
Right.
But maybe he can kind of reclaim himself and become something different altogether.
Wow. Her plan, once again, is to go to Daenerys. But what is she going to
pitch? Yeah, oh, my God, my God. Okay, all right. So wait, this is what's exciting to me.
Let's
now,
hear.
We had talked about this happening.
Right. Well, that was Euron's pitch at the King's Moot. He's like, hey, I'll bring us together. And they like went, great plan. You know what our plan is? We're going to bring us together with the Dragon Queen. There is nothing like stealing somebody else's idea, if it's a good idea. Do it at work, everybody.
Well, but before that, of course, make sure you need to steal their... Just like if you're going to steal someone's idea from work, make sure to steal their full presentation first.
Right, their ships.
Like they've done here. They've stolen the ships and the idea. One without the other is not going to work.
Everybody, go to work this week. Steal somebody's double P PowerPoint and just claim it as your own.
Your triple P PowerPoint presentation.
Pay the iron price for that PowerPoint.
And before you do that, make sure to go and fuck the shit out of some lady. I think that's what she says. She says something close to that. It's just, it was Ian McShane-ish. This was the full-on Ian McShane episode.
I know some people love this quicker pace of this season. They feel like it's really kind of moving real quick.
Right.
But the one thing that I would say, even though I like the scene fine, I thought it was a good scene.
Uh-huh.
One thing that hasn't tracked for me well is Theon. At the beginning of the season, he has jumped for his life. He's running from Ramsay. He's outside Winterfell. Suddenly, through a very crazy chain of events, he's in Essos, in Volantis, in a whorehouse, about to go meet the Mother of Dragons. Each beat has kind of worked, but this does seem like a bit of whiplash for what somebody who's very much suffered as Reek has done. And that part of the story hasn't tracked for me as well as some of the other stories, even though I did, once again, like this individual scene.
Okay, but considering that he's not a major character, how much time can we spend on his... I mean, we have spent a lot of time with him. I'm not going to say he's not a major character. He's not a majorly powerful character. So how much time do you want to spend on his rehabilitation?
That's a great question. Do you think he has redeemed himself? He helped save Sansa. Was that a full redemption? He did kill two innocent kids and pass them off as Bran and Rickon. He's done so much, so it's a bit tricky.
It is. However, I feel like we have allowed several other people in this series to be rehabilitated after doing bad things.
Yeah.
I feel like if you ask most people, they would feel sympathy for the Hound.
Right.
I feel if you ask most people, they'd feel sympathy for Jamie, who, right, let's not forget, besides all the other things he did, threw Bran out of a window casually. That wasn't Cersei who did that. No. That was Jamie.
Right.
So I feel like, basically, as you were talking before about how there's no morals or happiness in this world, that things are relative, that Jamie is relatively a good guy in this world, the Hound is relatively a good guy in this world, and that we can say the same for Theon. He's done a lot of bad shit, but it depends on which way he's trending. I feel like he's trending, okay, unlike his penis, he is trending up.
Ouch. I've said ouch a lot. Every time we talk about Theon, people could probably have a drinking game of me saying ouch. I apologize, listeners. I'm so repetitive. All right. So you like where that storyline's going. Once again, you gave this an 8.5 because this is, I believe, a strong scene. I'm doing something new this week. Let's review them again. The Hound, King's Landing, Riverrun, and Theon. What so far that we've covered has been your favorite part?
King's Landing, for sure.
Okay. Well, we're going to continue on the smack talk train, and we're now going to go on the recruiting trail. We're going to join Sansa, Jon, and Ser Davos, and occasionally Tormund, as we do a tour of the North to get fighting forces for the upcoming battle.
It's the supplicating Starks.
Heck yeah. They begin at the Wildling encampment, and you were talking about the extras in the Dothraki scene last week, Catfish. The Wildlings, they're here, but all 2,000 fighting men are definitely not here at this northern encampment.
This is my assumption is that these guys are sort of the sub-chief leaders of the rest.
That's
and as I was thinking about that, I'm thinking these guys have to be really convinced because then they have to go back and convince their guys.
Yeah, it's a bit like the Hardhome scene from season 5 where Jon had to convince the Wildlings to all come south of the wall. And sure enough, here it's replicated. And sure enough, one of these Wildling elders was one of the people at Hardhome, this kind of older, more grizzled version of Tormund, another redhead with a red beard. He was in that episode, and now he's back. And apparently his name is Dim Dalba.
I'm also going to say this, is that basically, even though the Wildlings are powerful and crazy and fighters,
yeah,
there's still a quote-unquote a bunch of Wildlings we don't see who are sort of like the small folk Wildlings. What are we doing now? Okay, I guess we're doing this. We're going to fight whoever they tell us to fight. We go on our way.
And Dim Dalba, this guy who's at Hardhome, who does most of the negotiating here, he's like, look, yeah, we helped you fight the White Walkers. That's one thing. But why do you want to do this to us? Well, why should we fight again and die again? We got here to get away from dying.
He does make a good point in that we need to fight these people so that we can go and fight the Wildlings. Otherwise, we're going to get attacked by them. I think the only point that the Wyndham Wizard, a.k.a. Tormund Giantsbane, says something that makes sense when you look at it. But when you look a little bit further, I think someone could have asked more questions. He says, look, Jon died for us.
Right.
If we're not willing to die for him, we're cowards. Now, that sounds perfectly good.
Okay.
Except for I would say, yes, Jon died for us. And yet, I see him right over there. And he seems to be fine. So, if we die for him, are we going to look like that? Or are we going to look like all other people I've seen in the world who have died? Because I'm happy to come back like that. If that's dying, I'm fine with it. If dying is what I'm used to, not cool.
Not cool. I have to be honest, in this meeting with the Wildlings, there is one super delegate I like to call Double W.
Double W?
1-1. The giant, when he says snow, everybody else, the super delegate, kind of has a lot of sway. Everybody else is like, oh, okay, we'll fight then.
He does. He does. Although, again, you have to wonder,
yeah,
if, like Hodor, rest in peace, that basically that's just the word he knows. Maybe he's not saying Jon Snow. Maybe he just all the time says snow. Or what if he is, when he says snow, he means Snow's idea is for shit.
Right. What words he said Tormund last season in Hardhome. And so I'm not sure we've really... He needs a monologue.
He knows people's names.
When he went in for his audition, he didn't have to learn many sides. You know, he's like, show me the sides. So I just say this? Oh, okay, great.
He's like, giant, Party of one. Somebody on Periscope says, what if it was about to snow? And he knew that. This all right. makes good
He's
sense.
He's so tall, he could see the weather forecast. He's like, snow.
Again, I love it in these scenes. I want to see the guys in back. Just like when the Dothraki stopped last week when Daenerys stopped and they were like, are we stopping to eat? What's happening? I want some of these guys in back going to say, he said snow, but it's, Does that mean yes snow or no snow? I mean, he said snow and then he walked away.
Right. So maybe he doesn't like snow. He's like, snow, walk away.
You know
away.
What? I'm going to say he's anti-snow. Does anybody, you agree? Anti-snow? How about you? It's up in the air right now.
Oh, somebody in the Periscope just hashtagged never snow. The never snow movement has gained traction.
You know, the guy's a giant. So he could not judge my case fairly.
So the next place we go really has what I consider a beautiful establishing shot. There's waterfalls in the foreground and a beautiful castle and amongst snowy trees. They went to Aspen. No, they went to Bear Island and went to House Mormont. This is give it up for Grayscale, Jorah Mormont's house that he had to run away from.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we meet probably the best smack talker of them all.
We do.
10-year-old Lady Mormont.
Now, just a quick question before we get into the scene, because it's delightful. I'm a little bit confused because, again, I don't think Jon Snow should be leading this discussion. It should be Sansa. She's the Stark. He's the bastard. Even though he's going to be leading it, it seems to me that she should be in the middle. She should be the one who starts talking.
Right.
Why do you think they did it this way?
If theoretically we're going in chronological order, John had just spoken to the wildlings. He was the one who had convinced them. He is the quote unquote general, you would say.
He is absolutely the general. But these guys all care about names.
Well,
and he's a snow.
True. But did you like how...
Hashtag never snow.
Never snow movement gaining traction on this podcast. This is crazy. But so many people in Periscope right now are talking about how much they love this actress.
She was great.
Lady.
She was fabulous.
During this scene while it played out, Catfish, you were giggling so much. You loved it so much.
She was so good.
Did this make you want to have your own spoiled brat? Like, does this make you want to have...
No, because I still don't want to pay for college.
Lady Mormont invented talk to the hand.
You know, she's so good.
Somebody tried to talk to her. She was like... Eat it, maester.
Yeah. She's like, all right, enough with the chitty chat. All right? I'm not here to talk about dolls. Let's get this cracking.
And she did such a great job. And she even talked smack to Sansa. She's like, oh.
Yeah. She's like, are you a Bolton or a Lannister? I'm confused.
I get different reports. Yeah. Oh, snap.
You really a Stark, huh? Oh, so good.
There was a great Easter egg. Great Easter egg right at the beginning of this scene for everybody who really has been paying attention to.
So that's not me.
Sansa starts off with she's saying, it's a pleasure to meet you, Lady Lyanna. You were named after my aunt, a.k.a. the aunt Lyanna, who's the statue down in the crypt who we've focused so much on, especially this season with Bran's visions.
And who I thought we were going to focus on more, frankly.
All right. So... This double L, Little Lyanna,
No, that's triple L.
Triple L.
Little Lady Lyanna.
She's just great.
Oh, my
Everything
God.
She says, you know, we died fighting for your brother, Rob. Thanks a lot. My mom died fighting for your brother, and that got us nothing.
Hey.
Ooh, love that. Love
before
talking
we get
smack.
Into the dialogue, let me just say one more, just to reemphasize this.
Yeah.
Okay? We have gone through a number of kings in King's Landing. Not any one of them, except for the great King Joffrey.
Right.
Not any one of them has the strength, the will, and the intelligence, and the comportment
right.
of this young lady.
You think she should be king at the end?
Why the fuck not?
All right, so somebody in the Periscope saying we would love this little lady, Lyanna, to marry King Joffrey when he comes back.
That would... Whoa, power couple.
It would be. She's a little young, but he'll wait. He'll wait for his match.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
her first thing after she says, "You're a Snow, not a Stark." Youch. Then the next.
Right. She dusts first, like a pitcher, she dusts Sansa off the plate.
Right.
And then she goes to Jon. She just dusts Jon off the plate.
And so everybody gets their kind of moment in the sun here. Jon tried with her. Not going to happen. Sansa tried with her. She's like, "Listen, my mother was a great warrior. She marched with your brother. She's dead in his fighting cause, and we've got nothing." And so it's up to a lowly upjump knight in Ser Davos to get through to her.
Now, one thing we know about Ser Davos.
Yeah. Ser Knuckles.
Ser Knuckles is great with young girls.
He has a lot of practice. That's true. With Shireen.
And I'm not saying that in any Boston Globe kind of way.
No.
He completely understands, respects, and treats with dignity young women. He talks to her, and he brings it to her level. And I don't mean down to her level, but he says, look, he's not talking about, you know, the Starks. Stark and Snow are trying to play on history and honor and things like that. And Davos is saying, look, for our survival,
right,
we've got to do this.
And
then, wait, hold on. The other person that Lyanna dusts off at one point is her advisor.
Right, that's when she gives him the talk to the hand.
She gives him the hand. Amazing. A little brush off.
That's a baseball talk for all our international listeners.
Exactly.
And so Davos jumps up, and she had done research about Jon. She had done research about Sansa.
Right.
But Davos, she hadn't done anything. She didn't, you know, he probably wasn't in the scroll that they sent.
The House of Swarth? Wait, what is that? The House of Swarth?
And so Davos goes to the threat of the White Walkers, which is not something I would think would be a great call. Because
nobody ever believes it. Nobody ever believes it. So that was the only thing about this scene that didn't make sense to me, that she doesn't laugh him off. You know, there's two ways you can be about the White Walkers.
Yeah.
Either you can think it's a ridiculous, foolish story, or you can be scared crapless.
That's right. That is right.
Somebody again saying she is an awesome, she's a sharp little double M.
Double M.
Mouthy Mormont.
Ouch. No.
Good work.
So he goes to her uncle. He's like, your uncle, and I would probably think he would be a great uncle, to be completely honest, considering her age and Jor Mormont, who died there at Craster's Keep. He's like, your uncle was concerned about this. He went to fight them at the Fist of the First Men. Your uncle named Jon Snow his replacement. Jon fought them at Hardhome. We've got to do this. The dead are coming. And so that's what convinces her. I thought it was a bit shocking because, like you said, I wasn't sure people would really believe that the White Walkers exist. Ned Stark cut off somebody's head who claimed he saw the White Walkers in the very first 15 minutes of the very first episode. But that is what convinces her. And she's going to...
And hey, congratulations.
Oh, great. I'm going to get some troops.
For all that hard work,
we've got,
yeah. I'm going to say 62. 62.
You know how much it cost us to travel to Bear Island? The ferry cost, 62.
However.
Yeah.
She claims they're worth 620, which I still think would be a disappointing
number.
Right.
We need more than that.
Can they fight as good as 100 men? Because then that's 6,000.
Right. We really, really need some bodies. But what is interesting for all you eagle-eyed viewers is that little lady Lyanna Mormont, she goes with them to their camp. She goes with her 62 men. I love it. I hope she's around for a couple more episodes for
hell,
awesome. The rest of the season.
And then Davos again, he's so awesome. He says, if they are half as ferocious as you or a tenth as ferocious as you, the Boltons are in serious trouble. So that was awesome.
I think they should send her undercover into Winterfell. She'd just kill all those jerks or make them feel so insufficient they wouldn't fight.
Man, I think she should kill. I think she could take care of Bolton.
Yeah, she really could.
I'm telling you, again, this scene was so beautiful and she was so great in it. I'm usually very down on new characters, but I'd be happy to see her more involved because she is a great character.
Yes, she was. Great actress, great character. Hopefully we see more of her. The final northern house that we see on the stop is they go to House Glover. Now, once again, you kind of really have had to been paying complete attention. But if you go back to the first time we saw Balin Greyjoy and Yara Greyjoy in this season, season six, Yara is telling her father, she's like, well, we just lost Deepwood Mott, which sure enough is this castle that we're at now. So the Ironborn, who had come and taken over back in season two when Robb took all the forces north, these people have been fighting to get their castle back ever since then, and they are not, they're not going to forget. They say the North remembers. This guy remembers his castle being taken, his wife being killed by the Ironborn. And so
now here's a little side painful note that some people hate. This actor I've seen numerous times before, and he is in a great British horror comedy movie called Severance.
Oh, okay.
About an office workers that go to have a bonding experience out in the woods, and he is the blowhard boss, and it is a great, great movie. And again, I love his performance in this as well, because he had the loss that he has. You can feel it there, and he's filled with pain, and so he is done. He's not putting up with any of this. Starks, White Walkers, although they don't mention the White Walkers,
right?
You know, maybe they should have said that, but I know what he would have said. He would have laughed in their damn faces if they'd have mentioned White Walkers to him.
Somebody in the Periscope chat said this poor guy is a double G.
Double G.
Grumpy Glover. He says that House Glover will not abandon their house to fight alongside the wildlings. He is pissed off about what Jon did. And Sansa tries. She didn't say anything with the wildlings. She tried with Lady Mormont and failed. And she's trying again. She's like, listen, you were pledged to House Stark. Shouldn't you honor that commitment? And he
gets right up in her grill.
Oh, yeah. He's like, we served you for centuries. Screw it. House Stark is dead. Ouch. They have set it up. And then the final scene with our double S's, they have gathered their troop, and their troops are stationed at the exact same place where Stannis had his troops.
Okay.
Stationed. So here we are. They're there. And Sansa, this is my reading on this scene. Sansa has tried multiple times. Jon got the wildlings. Davos got House Mormont. Sansa, we haven't seen her get anybody. So she goes to write a raven message.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing that makes sense, I've seen people tweeting me on Twitter that this is what she did. She must have written that raven message to Littlefinger saying, okay, you said you had troops. We need troops. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I'm a little concerned because I've been behind Jon.
Right.
You know, because he's gone through a lot. And I feel like at some point when Joffrey comes back and experiences his rebirth, that Jon will follow Joffrey and stop being a double M.
Double M?
Mopey Moperson.
Oh.
But
if death didn't cure the double M, I don't know what would.
True. My only concern is Jon seems to follow the same war philosophy that Donald Rumsfeld does.
What do you mean?
And that is, we fight with the army we have and not the army that we want.
Even if that army isn't enough, which is what Sansa is arguing.
Right, exactly. So if this is a letter to Littlefinger, and I'm convinced by you that it is, because basically he offered his services, if you need my help, this is what I like to call bad news for the Starks.
So Sansa sees these ravens. She goes to write it. The troops they have are already fighting amongst themselves. You would assume that was probably something like a wildling fighting with one of the northern lords, or maybe just northern lords fighting amongst themselves. And so Jon said it. He said, we've got to fight now. And so we're getting to the end of the season. This is it. This is getting the big battle. If we believe the reports, Ramsay with the Karstarks and the Umbers, he has more men.
How many men? Well, how many men?
Yeah, I'm trying to recall, but it's something along the lines of Ramsay would have close to 5,000 men. Somebody's predicting that those Vale Knights will come like Gandalf. Look to the east at sunrise. Look to Molestown at sunrise.
Wait, somebody says Ramsay doesn't have a giant, a direwolf, or a red witch.
Well, that's got to be their hope if they're going to be approaching it with approximately 2,000 less men. 2,000 wildlings, 200 Hornwood, 143 Maesons, 62 Mormonts. That doesn't even get you to 3,000. It doesn't even get you to 2,500. They are short. Somebody's making an Austin Powers joke in Periscope saying Melisandre can shoot laser beams with sharks on them out of her fingers. They really are outnumbered. But the giant direwolf and magical component can hopefully even this up. Or we are going to be relying on that weasel Littlefinger to help out. What do you think?
Oh, God. Now that I see it happening, the only reason Littlefinger is, I think we saw him earlier, is because Littlefinger is going to get drawn into this. And who the hell is going to trust Littlefinger? Nobody except for Sansa. And then that could cause division between Sansa and Jon.
That is a great point, Catfish. Great point. And sadly, I think that must be where we're headed. So let's get to our final location that we're going to cover today. Let's go back to the lovely city of Braavos and let's follow Arya Stark as she walks through the city, through the people, and she's hearing important information. She hears about the Greyjoys having boats there in Volantis.
Oh boy. You know,
And she offers this man multiple bags of gold to get her home to Westeros. She wants to be on the next ship, and she doesn't want to sleep in a hammock. She wants her own friggin' cabin. She wants a wonderful vacation cruise to Westeros. What do you think?
I have one big problem with this.
Okay.
I think they could have done this entire thing still. They could have done the whole thing exactly as it is with her trying to hide what she looks like. She still could have been caught and seen by someone, even if she had tried to alter her looks. This is completely insane for her to be walking around in a city where there's at least two people
right.
who could look like anybody else and kill her, and to walk around looking exactly like she does.
Not only that, Catfish, she's got her hair pulled back from her face so everybody
please.
Can get a good look.
It's completely insane.
Well, what could she do? What should she do? Should she just kind of disguise herself and just stow away on a ship? This is tough because you're right. She's kind of screwed, dare I say it. As soon as Arya was on that bridge, she's looking out at the statue there known as the Titan of Braavos. And over her shoulder, we see an out-of-focus shot of a kindly old woman. I knew exactly what it was. I was like, run, run, run. Oh,
no, absolutely. Absolutely. And she gets her butt stabbed.
Right. And if the waif is a trained assassin, she did a poor job of killing Arya. Is the waif going to be reprimanded when she gets back to the House of Black and White and say, you know, we're trained killers. You didn't kill her. That was a weak job.
If she says, just like Arya got in some serious trouble for not finishing the job,
right.
What happens if Arya comes back and kicks ass? Is the waif going to be in trouble? I mean, just because the waif is a true believer,
right?
In the end, it seems like the only important thing is the job.
RedStar_2112 on the Periscope claimed the waif was a double S.
Double S.
A stabby senior.
Stabby senior. Now, some people posited.
Yeah.
And this is a crazy idea, and that's why I love it. It's one of those out there better call. Was someone posited that wasn't actually Arya? I don't know how that could be. Arya can't even look like anybody else yet. Even less making someone else look like her.
Right. We know.
But I love it because it's crazy.
Well, people want Arya to live. And Arya, I would have a hard time believing that she could live from that kind of stab in this world where there isn't modern medicine. And she.
Well, not to mention the fact that I guarantee you that water is not clean. In fact, that water is probably worse than Rio levels.
It's pretty tough. And so Catfish, Arya obviously didn't die. She got up out of the water after hiding underneath the waves or underneath the canal, I suppose.
Yeah.
And she's bleeding. She's leading a trail of blood to wherever she's going. If the waif somehow finds out she's alive again, what can happen? How can Arya be saved? This is deep, deep trouble. People want to believe that Arya somehow got a fake face of herself and put it on somebody. Which, let's be honest, Arya saw a fake face. Somebody made a fake face of hers, which she saw last season, episode 10, where she went back to the House of Black and White and she kept pulling faces off people and saw her own face there. So theoretically, there was a fake face hanging around somewhere. But this okay. This has got to be Arya.
But that's then you have to assume that Arya, that most people like, has decided she's going to sacrifice somebody else. Basically, set some poor innocent sap up to get killed in her place.
When they say only death can pay for life, which is an old saying on the show,
mm-hmm.
and the faceless men have to, you know, give the gift of mercy, I guess, in some ways, with that pool in their temple in the House of Black and White, they're letting people die for themselves. Is it at all possible that Arya could somehow, like the Hound, like Jon, die and be brought back to life, and that would count? That's all it needed to be.
Who would bring back Arya to life? Who would care enough to bring her back to life?
I have no idea.
I'm not going to be too hard on this. I don't like her storyline getting sidetracked, but I'm going to trust in them, and I'm not going to give this hard. You know, I reserve the right later on if they pick this up and she gets sidetracked and stuck on Braavos. I reserve the right to be unhappy with the storyline, but I'm not going to go there yet. I'm just saying, if this is actually Arya walking around, it showing her face off to everyone, it's silly, because they could have accomplished the same thing by her trying to hide who she was, but they could see through it, you know.
This theoretically is going to be solved next week in an episode entitled No One, a.k.a. the person Arya was supposed to be, the person who the waif is supposed to be. The waif, after she stabs Arya multiple times, the waif actually removes her mask. I'm not sure that's in the code of conduct of the House of Black and White, too. Like, when you kill somebody, shouldn't you keep the con going?
Well, this time it's personal. Unless they do something that's sort of unbelievable, I think people are not going to be so happy with where this Arya storyline goes, right? I mean, the options we've laid out are, A, somehow she got someone else killed in her place.
Right.
B, she's stuck on Braavos. C, she goes and
dies.
She dies, right. Which would be horrible. And then, as someone said, maybe someone takes her face to go cause mischief as Arya. People would not be happy if the same actress was on there, but it was Farya, fake Arya, as someone says on our, I believe it was Dooley's Left Legs, fake Arya, coming back to Westeros. I'm not going to comment on this storyline so far. Again, maybe they'll be able to sell it differently, that it's not really Arya, but I still think there'd be some unhappiness with this. But it was the last thing. They wanted to give us a surprise. They did. I'll reserve comment on that storyline.
All right, Catfish. So just because, once again, you were so high, 8.5. I'm rounding it up to a
loved
nine.
It.
Did you have a particular favorite scene now that we've covered them all?
Oh, God. I will say this. I couldn't have thought that it could have gotten any better than the scene between Cersei and Olenna. I have always loved it when these two master word technicians get together and battle it out with words. I find that more thrilling than fight scenes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. But when we got to Triple L, Little Lady Lyanna, that scene was amazing. The way she brushed everybody off except for Davos. She even brushed off her assistant, her consigliere.
Right. The maester got the brush off. All right. So let's go ahead, and we've got 3 episodes left this season.
Woo.
I keep saying it, but I think these final 3 episodes, cuckoo bananas crazy. I think they're going to be great. I am pumped for where most everything is heading. We still haven't seen Dorne since the beginning, first episode of the season. So who knows?
Are you holding on to that there's going to be anything more from Dorne this season?
Kind of feels like there should be, since we've spent so much time, but maybe not. I don't know.
All right.
And so we have some people in the Periscope chat saying the season has really flown by, and in some ways it has.
I think that's partially because the they do the 4 episode setup, but to me the end of episode 4 was the best ending so far. Some people didn't like it.
You're saying the Daenerys?
It was Daenerys on fire, baby.
I'm still holding that door. Episode 5, that ending, the way it made me feel, the way it made me, like, literally made me sit up in my seat, that for me is the big one. So, Catfish, we've got two final things to do in this.
And we do them every week.
We do them every week. We read your wonderful, if you're kind enough to give us iTunes or Stitcher written reviews, we read them. And we're going to give you our Joffrey of the Week. That's our person, our place, idea. Something that brightens our day and makes us think of his grace. Who, with so many characters coming back, people are mentioning, hey, the Blackfish came back. Jon Snow came back to life. The Hound came back.
So tough.
You know,
so tough.
There's one final character to come back who would really, really raise the bar, and that is King Joffrey. So let's get to our iTunes reviews. We have two new ones from the United States and one and one new one from the great state of Canada. Catfish, why don't you read the first one from P.M. Harrell?
P.M. Harrell says, great podcast, gives it 5 stars.
Thank you so much.
P.M. says, this is a great change of pace from some of the other self-serious Game of Thrones podcasts.
Double S's.
Yes, self-serious. Sorry, you got me there. This year has been very great so far because there's always been one of the hots to agree with and one to get mad at every episode. Keep up the great work. Till he, King Joffrey, returns, Paul.
Thank you so much, Paul. You're officially entered in
the contest. Sorry, because I don't read these ahead of time, I messed up. Because there's always been one of the hosts to agree with and one to get mad at every episode, except for last week where we completely agreed, and then we agreed again this week.
Yeah, we have. We've suddenly started agreeing a lot.
It's bad. It's bad. I'll start disagreeing with you again.
Okay, so let me read one here in the U.S. iTunes store. It's from Lizard 1972.
It was a good year for lizards.
It was. And they say, quirky but enjoyable. 5 stars.
Good.
Lizard writes, while I originally thought this podcast was a little off.
He's completely right.
Yeah. First impression is always the correct one, Lizard. I have come to rather like the tongue-in-cheek Joffrey Zealots.
I don't know what they mean by tongue-in-cheek. We are completely and seriously all for Joffrey.
Right. The humor may not be for everyone.
True story.
And as with other podcasts about Game of Thrones, there may be occasional lapses between continuity, between what is known in the books and what is known in the show. I love that Lizard 1972 is using the Dothraki phrase, it is known. What is known? It is all known. Lizard goes on to write a niche podcast that is a bit different, but has its own merits. I especially like the instant Periscope they do immediately after the show airs. Thank you so much, Lizard.
Which coincidentally is pretty much the podcast.
Pretty much. There is some slight editing that happens. And somebody just put in Periscope, podcast is awesome. This episode, worst of the season. Whoa,
Right. Someone who's disagreeing with us. Good.
We're going to have a feedback episode coming out on Friday later in the week, but let's get to our last iTunes review, Catfish, and it's from the great state of Canada, as I always like to say.
Please house me. Okay, they give it 5 shame bells out of 5.
Shame.
This is by Baconator 1974.
Ooh.
Now, 5 shame bells out of 5 equates to 5 stars.
I hope so.
Some people might think that it was 0 stars.
Okay.
The Baconator says, I've been a double L. Loyal listener of this entertaining and informative podcast for years.
Oh, thank you.
You won't find a more detailed frame-by-frame analysis of each episode at 30 frames per second. The hosts, Bub and Catfish, have read advanced copies of future chapters in which it is revealed that the one true king, Joffrey, faked his own death and will return in the next 2 books.
Ooh.
My personal theory is that Sir Robert Strong is actually Joffrey in disguise. Whoa, that's a good theory.
Could be.
I can't wait for him to remove his helmet and reveal himself. As a smug book reader myself, I appreciate the insight without spoilers.
Hey.
Keep up the good work. This podcast is the best. Thank you, Baconator.
Thank you, Baconator, so much. Now, we don't want to end the podcast on such a love-in, so I want to read this tweet I got from someone called Miguel Solis on Twitter. He said, hey, Bubba, your podcast can be fun, but it pisses me off when you don't stick to the point of analyzing your show. Save the side stories. Whoops.
Now, just as a formal note, you have been entered into the contest to win a prize.
That's right.
For this podcast.
Oh, so he hated us telling him that.
Sorry about that, letting you know you might win something.
All right, so now let's get to our Joffreys of the Week. Catfish, this was an episode you really liked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine there were a lot of Joffreys in it.
Ooh.
Or there could be out there in the real world. Who is your Joffrey going forward?
No. For this week, this episode had so many good quips in it my Joffrey of the week does indeed come from this episode.
Who is it?
And the person most embodying the way Joffrey feels about the world in general, and ladies in particular, is the High Sparrow.
When he
gives this advice to Marjorie.
Yeah, what's he saying?
Marital congress does not require desire on the part of the woman. It just requires patience. My Joffrey of the week, the High Sparrow.
Yeah, marital advice. If you could have done that in a Dr. Phil voice, we really...
Well, all right.
Yeah, ooh. High Sparrow... Like Joffrey, he's got a lot of power.
Yeah.
I'll just let that statement lie there if that's okay.
Go right ahead. You can just move right on. Bubba, well, I took a really good one.
Right.
But there's more out there. Who is your Joffrey of the week this week?
Well, I'm going to give it up to somebody who has acted on the show a bit like Joffrey acted in life. What do we know about House Tully? Their words are family, duty, honor, which, to be honest, I really think they stole from how Joffrey approached the life he has.
Correct.
Is he approaches it with family, duty, honor.
Okay.
And I think the Tullys just stole that and said, hey, if Joffrey's doing it, why don't we have those be our words? And so which member was willing to give it up all for family?
Oh,
the Blackfish.
Oh, okay. Oh, right.
And so when the Blackfish...
I thought you were talking about Theon's member.
And so when the Blackfish was willing to let a relative die in order to keep the castle, keep everything pure and good, he was displaying what I like to call double J.
Double J?
Joffrey justice.
Because
Joffrey, you don't know how many times he was willing for Tommen to die. And to be honest, King's Landing would be much better off if he had just let it happen.
True story.
Joffrey let his sister, Myrcella, die for the betterment of the realm.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, Blackfish was going to let Edmure go off stage, exit stage right, for the good of River Run. So for treating River Run like Joffrey treated the kingdom, Blackfish Tully, Brendan Blackfish Tully, you are my Joffrey of the week.
Oh, God, there were so many candidates this week.
But
I think we picked a couple of good ones.
All right. Tweet us your Joffreys of the week and your Better Call calls, predictions, what's going to happen in these three final explosive episodes. You can tweet at Catfish, at CJGman67. That's your 67th favorite G-Man. CJGman66, Catfish is coming for you, sucker. Or you can tweet at...
Fit and Trim. That's Bubba at FITTENTRIM.
And you can catch us next time on
The Joffrey of Podcasts.
Cocksucker.